time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 1st of June 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. I'm Chris Walker, and on the 1st of June I spoke with local board chair Faye Storer, opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Frankie Hill, and the organiser of a Peace Foundation parenting course, Rebecca Bretthauer. It's time to say good morning to our first guest for the morning, that's Faye Storer.
Good morning, Chris.
Yeah, chair of the Waiheke Local Board. Good morning, Faye. Thank you for coming along.
No problem.
So we've got a couple of things we want to talk about this morning, and there's some big issues in front of the island at the moment. So let's start off perhaps with Matiatia and the proposition around the marina down there. And also, of course, there's concerns, ongoing concerns around Matiatia, transport, parking, the usage of the wharf and all the rest of it. But let's concentrate initially on the marina. So the board in relation to, a large development like the marina, what's the position of the board around taking a stance on that?
Well, the board hasn't discussed the marina. My understanding is that the last community board did when they had their first application in, and I think that the last community board supported it, but I'd have to check on that one. So this board hasn't discussed it. My personal view is that it's not a board issue. It's a resource management issue, and as I said in my letter to the marketplace this week, the applicant has the right to put an application in. They have the right to have it heard, and everybody needs to either support or oppose it if they have any interest in it.
So, I mean, that surprises me that you don't see this as a board issue, because it's going to have significant impact on Matiatia, its future usage. It's going to impact on a lot of other factors which do come into the kind of gambit of board concerns, such as transport, parking, road use and so on. So what separates this out and makes it an issue which isn't of board interest?
Well, all the things that you've mentioned will be checked through the application process, and people going for an application as big as this go through a very rigorous process. You've got planning officers down in council checking the application right now, and I understand they've asked for further information. So by the time this application's finished with all its expert reports, it's going to be very, very thick. Now, all those specialist involvements, parking, traffic, what effect it might have on ferries, public access, the tides, the ecology, all that are done by professionals, and they are assessed by the planners. If the planners are not happy with what the applicant has put in front of them, they then ask for a peer review of those reports, and that peer review is paid for by the applicant. So by the time it comes out the other side, there's not a lot more you can do with it in terms of expertise and examination.
No, but say if we look at the development of the super city, and one of the major issues, and I know one that you were keenly interested in, was how much the delegation of decision making would be rest with local boards as opposed to the city and with council officers. And at that time you were quite firmly of the view that as much decision making as possible should come down to the local level. So in this case, you seem to be saying, well, look, we've got a bureaucratic process around the resource management there, and let's leave it in their hands. So while I understand that resource management doesn't come under the board's role, don't you still see that there is a place for the board to be advocating the local position on a development, a major development like a marina?
Well, as you touched on, the Resource Management Act is completely different from the Local Government Act under which the board operates, and so we haven't been looking for delegations under the RMA, except that we did push for greater planning delegations, and as you know, they were not granted by the Mayor and governing body. So all we have is some, I'd say, low-key input into some trigger areas, which I've got here with me if you want to know about them. So I think what you're asking is, why doesn't the board take a community position and say, yay, we want the marina, or no, we don't? Well, my response to that would be that there are going to be people who want it, there are going to be people who don't want it, and the Resource Management Act allows for submissions, hearings, environment court, and that's where it will be sorted out. The board could say yes, it wants it. The board could say no, it doesn't. But my personal preference is that if board members have got very strong views about it, they should put that forward. So if you think that the board saying they want or don't want something on behalf of the community is going to carry some weight, well, it might. But at the end of the day, the Resource Management Act is not about numbers. Whereas it's good to have some numbers, no doubt about that, at the end of the day, whoever assesses it will be assessing it on quality of argument, and that's just the way it works.
Do you think there's an expectation from the community members, the people who elected the board, that you will take a position on issues such as this?
Well, one or two people have asked about that. To be quite honest, they've been on both sides. People are saying, hey, let's have this marina, great idea, best place for it. Other people have said no. I think the main concerns for the board really around Mateatea are parking and traffic, and for me personally would be about public access around that coast. And from what I can see of the application, they're certainly not going to stop public access. So in terms of the parking and traffic, it's probably a good opportunity to have a whole lot of people who have so-called expertise in this area assessing that Mateatea and will have the fruits of their labour, because we certainly have hit a bit of a brick wall down there.
And other issues where there's been, you know, I suppose a lot of tension between, you know, different points of view, the board hasn't been afraid of taking a position in those issues though.
No, I suppose they haven't. As I say, I think that this is going to go through a very robust process, and there are advantages to both arguments. So, you know, the board can have a chat about it and see what they want to do. It's not entirely up to me.
So is that an agenda item for the board to discuss this?
No, it's not on the agenda, no.
So how would that come about?
I mean, we'll have a chat about it. If someone wants to put it on the agenda, they can.
Right. It seems a kind of a casual approach, I suppose, to something which is such a major development.
Well, it is, but there are major developments all over the place, and, you know, the board can get involved in those, or it can't. The reality is the board can put in a submission, but if the submission isn't heard or doesn't come out to the board's satisfaction, we have no rights of appeal. And that's what's happened under the New Auckland Council. So that's a bit of a, you know, a half a process. So, you know, we can have a chat about it, see what we want to do. I haven't had anyone on the board say that they particularly oppose it or support it. We've all assumed, I suppose, that it will go through its process.
So you do, you know, you've mentioned that the members of the board are free to make private submissions on it.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you intend to do that?
I'll think about it. The application hasn't been notified yet, so nobody's seen what it's looking like. When it is notified, which I understand is going to be in a few weeks, I'll certainly be looking at all the papers, and I expect everybody else will be as well, and we can then see what we think it's going to do, and see whether or not we think there's some gaps. Yes. I don't think you can do anything until you've seen what the application looks like, and right now nobody knows.
Okay, so it's largely based on the previous application. What was your view on that application?
I wasn't on the board during the previous application. As I say, my understanding is the community board supported it, and I'll go back and check their minutes about that. But this is a different application.
Yes, but I mean, you're someone who's keenly interested in Waiheke development and planning issues, so I presume you did have a view on it at the time.
Well, I read the papers at the time. I'll read the papers this time and I'll see what I think.
All right. And can we expect that to be, you know, be part of the board discussion?
When it comes out, we'll have a look at it.
So I suppose this links to some other areas where large-scale developments are being considered and what the board's role is in this. And so let's kind of talk about the unitary plan for a moment. So the unitary plan, while areas of it, Waiheke is exempt from areas of it, there are certainly significant areas that still affect Waiheke, particularly around coastal development and so forth. So what kind of discussions has the board had about and input into the draft unitary plan?
The land-based unitary plan, draft unitary plan, is not going to affect Waiheke or any of the area under our jurisdiction. The coastal bits are the regional policies, and that's what the board has been working on recently. And we've hosted two evenings and another one on 1 meeting between planning officers and the houseboat people, of which two of our members, Joe and Don, attended. So we've been involved in that. In terms of the land base, we have no involvement at all, and that goes back to the fact that the Hauraki Gulf Islands District Plan Review was very much through its process when this draft unitary plan started for the rest of the region. So we were first off the blocks with the first district plan. We were first off the blocks in the country with the second district plan, and it's just coming out of the Environment Court hopefully in the next few months, 2013, after being started in 2006. But the rest of the region wasn't in that position. So in terms of the land base, no, we've had no involvement.
So, say at the time of the Whareitana Bay development, one of the things you said in regard to that was that, you know, the process was underway, the consents had been given, and so the board was kind of powerless to act. But you did say at the time that you felt there should be stricter rules around coastal development, and that, you know, that might be appropriate. So the unitary plan, the coastal development part of it, which does impact on Waiheke, gives some opportunity to perhaps strengthen some of those measures about coastal development. What input has the board had into that, on that issue?
That's right. Well, in terms of input, let's look at where it is. Right now, the planning officers are engaging. This is not consultation. They're engaging with the public, engaging with the boards, and working to put something into a draft. That draft goes back to a special committee of councillors in town. They decide what's going to be in the draft, and then it's going out for submission. So in terms of what the board's done, we've had several workshops now with planning officers where they've worked us through the coastal provisions, and we've given some feedback on that, and they've told us how they think it will affect us. So when the draft comes, and that they've taken through to they'll put into the draft and go to the committee, and then when that draft comes out for submission, we will be looking at it and deciding what we want to submit on, whether or not they've picked up on our concerns or not. And in terms of Whareitana Bay, you see, that didn't have any trigger, so there was no board involvement. So when I hear people say, well, look what the board did on that, remember Whareitana Bay, I just have to tear my hair out and think, well, you really haven't understood that the board was not involved with that planning at all. But the good thing that came out of that was that we added to our Waiheke board planning triggers all development infringing the coastal yard rules. So that was a good outcome for Whareitana Bay. And board members met with Dr. Roger Blakely in town and planning officers and lawyers, and we've added that to our triggers. So in terms of anything infringing the coastal yard rules, it comes in front of myself as the planning spokesperson for the board, and I have input. I have to tell you, though, that input is reduced to a comment on notification or non-notification, and I'm required to say I have a concern about this or I don't have a concern about that, and that's the way that input goes. Because what this council's done, but I think particularly the government's done, is they've tried to take elected representatives and councils out of resource management matters. And that's for various reasons.
So I want to come back to the unitary plan in a moment, but just picking up on a point you made there about, you know, so once these triggers have been met, then you kind of say whether you have concerns or don't have concerns. So that will come into play if the marina receives consent, won't it?
They haven't given me any information as to what it's going to do. Infringing the coastal yard rules, not necessarily, because this is on the sea, remember. There are some areas, of course, with reclamation. It depends on what they come up with. Yes, there is an opportunity there, possibly. But until we see what the plan is released for notification, we just don't know. And that's why I'm not jumping into this fray before I've seen the information.
Right, so you don't see a role in, say, being proactive around saying, well, these are the things that would mitigate any kind of concerns I may have when it comes to that part of the process.
Yeah, Chris, that's what I thought I've been saying over and over, is that when the information comes out, you can assess it, but right now the information's being processed. The applicant's gone to council planners, they've lodged their application with the planners. The planners have asked for more information. When the planners are sure that it is ready for notification, they will release it. And at the time that it's released for notification, then we will see it and the public will see it. But until that happens, it's not a baked cake, so to speak.
All right. Yeah. So let's jump back to the unitary plan. So I'm going to take from that, you know, there is still scope if there's stuff in the plan that you're making.
There may very well be, right. Yes.
So the unitary plan, so you've been having this discussion with council officers around what the draft should look like. What kind of suggestions or alterations have you made to council officers about the draft?
Well, I don't have workshop notes here, and I don't have any record with me of responses, but I would, as my memory serves me correctly, obviously concerned about the whole houseboat situation. That's something that's come up. Coastal provisions, amenity value, anything like that that was in the regional council provisions that affected us. But I can't give you details without the notes in front of me.
Right. Yeah. So the houseboat issue, are you hopeful that will be resolved? Is that something that the board is putting a lot of energy into?
The board has assisted the people, the houseboat people, to have some very good quality time with the officers. Now, remember, this is engagement, it's not consultation. Everything that's being talked about now at length, and as I say, we've hosted these workshops now, which board members, most board members have been present. All that is just going into something that the planners will put together for the committee in town. That committee will decide whether it goes in the draft or not. Just because we've said things and other people have said things doesn't mean to say it's going to get past that committee.
No, but a lot more likely to be taken notice of if you say it than if you don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's move on to the third issue. I'm just, we're talking to Faye Storer, the chair of the local board here on Waiheke Radio. So the third issue I wanted to touch on this morning, one that's been in people's minds and around the newspapers quite a lot, is the issue of mobile and street trading. And, you know, obviously there's been some kind of heat and concern around that in local weeks. Now, you've suggested that there should be a change in the process for the licensing of street trading and mobile traders.
Yeah, as a result of the abuse that Jim Hannon and myself have received because
let's just stop there because this is news. What abuse have you received?
Well, there's been a lot on social media carrying on about Jim and I and what we think should happen with street trading, which is quite frankly nonsense. So I'm happy to stick with what's facts. Now, what I have suggested to the officers is that in future, any street trading application which requires landowner consent comes in front of a full board at an open agenda item. Now, you just have to go through. Boards don't have any delegated authority for street trading. We don't have any delegated authority for regulatory matters at all. So this local board and no local board across the region issues a street trading licence. That's all done by officers in town. Now, when board involvement is triggered is in the landowner's consent. Now, if a street trader wants to be on a reserve or park, they need landowner's consent, and even that's been delegated to the parks advisor. The parks advisor needs to talk to the park's portfolio holders or spokespersons, which are myself and Jim Hannon, and say, what do you think of this application? And we give feedback, and then the park's advisor gives the feedback as landowner's consent to the street trading officer, and they issue the street trading license. So it's pretty remote. But when we are asked that question by the parks advisor as to if we think street trading should operate or what hours they should operate or whatever conditions there should be from a park or reserve, then we are able to refer that to the full board. And what we're going to do is do that in future because that's quite transparent. You know, the person can come and say why they need what hours they want or why they need a street trading license at all. Everyone can sit around the table and do it. And having said that, it's only a recommendation to the parks advisor, as I've outlined. So we can have that conversation, and anyone else who's interested can come and have a view as well. So that's fine. What it will do, of course, is add time to the process, but I think it's perhaps the best thing to do in the circumstances.
So given the, you know, we've had some applications for licences, there's been some to and fro about the timing of licences and where they have been. As you say, you are consulted by the parks officer around your views. Is it your views, or the I suppose you're speaking on behalf of the board?
We're the spokespersons, yeah. And spokespersons have the right to speak on behalf of the board on those matters within that area of the portfolio.
So, in regard to say the issue around the coffee cart on the causeway, which has been the one which has kind of, I suppose, caused the most conflict in recent times. What advice did you, or what was your position on that to the parks officer?
My recollection is that they requested Saturday trading, and Jim and my response is that we felt that they should stick with the Monday to Friday. They requested additional time in the morning. They had 8 till 2.30 and requested 7am till 2.30, which we thought was a great idea because that would pick up early people. I'll tell you why we don't think Saturday is a good time. The Ostend Saturday market depends on critical mass. And a former community board had what I think was a very, very good approach to street trade in Waiheke. And they started with this. Waiheke is an environmental destination. It is not a Bali-type destination. So street trading should try and stay out of beach areas or environmental areas, unless, of course, it's something like paddle boards, which or whatever, you know, thingies or something, which belong in a beach environment. So it's not a Bali destination. That's not what we want to end up doing. In terms of Saturday market, from time to time over the years, there have been applications to set up all around the island. Now, if you permit that, then you don't have critical mass at the market. So that's the idea. If people want to do street trading, they go down to the market on Saturday morning and do it there, because that's its strength. So they've been probably the two main things. And then the other thing, of course, is effect on permanent businesses. And the current bylaw has no safeguard in it to protect any permanent business from a street trader setting up. Now, that's a change from the former Auckland City Council bylaw. But apparently, around about 2007 or thereabouts, Auckland City Council changed their bylaw and took out the provision that safeguarded permanent businesses, which used to be, I think, 300 metres or possibly 500, I'm not sure. Anyway, it used to be that you couldn't set up street trading a particular distance from a business that sold the same or a similar product. And that's to safeguard that business. That's gone. So what the street trading officers are doing in town now is they are giving out a lot of street trading licences, and the impact on permanent businesses is, so I hear, starting to resound around the region. So when the bylaw comes up for review, because as you know, every bylaw under Auckland Council has got to be reviewed by June 2015, this one goes out for consultation at the beginning of 2014. And speaking with a few of the shop owners, most of them are still of the understanding that they have a protection from street trading, and the reality is they don't. So they can all get involved when the street trading bylaw is reviewed.
Well, surely that's just the to and fro of business. I mean, you can set up a permanent business within 300 metres of another doing the same, and you know, the impact's there. I mean, you know, the supermarket opened and dairies closed. It's just the way that the world goes, surely.
Well, it is in terms of permanent businesses.
Well, these are permanent businesses. Well, they're just mobile permanent businesses.
Yeah, okay. But look, in terms of cost. Now, there's no landowner cost to parking on a reserve. So in terms of how much it costs about $175 non-refundable to apply for a street trading business. Okay, if it's on a park or reserve or roadside, there's no ground rent. And then in terms of coffee, I think it's about $547 for a six-month licence. So that's less than $100 a month. Now, I'm not going to make any judgment on whether or not that's a good idea. Street traders are great. They're wonderful. All I'm saying is that in the current bylaw, there is no provision to protect a business that is paying rents, rates, power, and has all those overheads and is at the mercy of a landlord if they wish to put up their rent. So that's the kind of thing that was in the bylaw before. I think a lot of people in permanent businesses have learnt to expect that. and the bylaws being reviewed. So everyone really needs to have a say on that as well.
So, I mean, I suppose in terms of the board and your role in trying to develop and support business on the island, this puts you in a role of kind of, I suppose, picking favourites, really, doesn't it? Do you support businesses with fixed premises or businesses with mobile premises? It's all about economic growth in the end, surely.
Well, I suppose it is. I don't think anyone's picking any favourites. I think we're just trying to be sensible about it. As I've said, I think the Saturday market one is a good one. I think the policies or the principles that the previous board put in were very good ones. And I don't think it's picking favourites at all. All it's doing is flagging the fact that the bylaw does not do this at the moment. It's up for review beginning of 2014. If anybody's interested, they need to have their input, just the way if anyone's interested in the marina, they have their input. Yeah. It's a statutory process. They can make submissions and be heard, and it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Okay, and I just want to pick up finally just on one other point you made there in discussion about the mobile traders, which is about the beach traders and your view that you don't want to see a kind of, as we called it, a Bali arrangement with lots of beach traders. So at the moment, probably two of the most popular mobile traders on the island are the Dragon Fired Pizza at Little Wainuiroa and the Crepe Cart at Palm Beach. Should they be concerned when their licences come up for renewal that the advice of the board is going to be that they're not be granted further licences?
Okay, not at all. When I say Bali type destination, I think we're talking about trinkets. Trinkets, baubles and beads and things like that. And from time to time, people have set up on the beaches with, clothing and beads and things like that. And it's very nice, and they're very nice products. But if they're close to the likes of Oniroa, then you've got permanent traders there who might not be very happy about it. No, I wouldn't call crepes and pizza Bali at all. I think they're very good businesses. All these are good businesses. And as I've said, the role of the board is extremely low. It's to do with landowner consent. It's nothing to do with the actual street trading license itself.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Faye. We've covered a lot of ground there. So thank you very much for joining us this morning here on Waiheke Radio.
That's my pleasure, Chris.
Waiheke Radio. You're listening to Island Life. I'm your host, Chris Walker, and I'm joined in the studio by our opinionated islanders. We have Alan Knight.
Good morning.
And Alex Stone. Now, we need to pass on condolences. Alex's father passed away.
Oh.
He's in Africa making arrangements and supporting his mother. So condolences from Waiheke Radio to Alex. Stepping in ably in his place is Frankie Hill. Good morning, Frankie.
Good morning, Chris, and good morning, Alan.
All right, so opinionated islanders, if you're new to the island, you don't know what we're up to, this, I suppose, is our tongue-in-cheek look at what's been happening locally, nationally, and internationally, and I suppose it originally kind of started off as a concept of kind of a bit of a look from the left and a look from the right, but it's kind of ended up just all over the place.
Yeah, which is suitable for Waiheke, of course, because we are all over the place.
That's nobody's right. Truly left or right, are they?
Yeah. So, and we just have had a chat with Faye Storer about some kind of key local issues at the moment, and we're going to pick up on a lot of those again. So,
yes, indeed.
I know, Alan, you're keen to talk about this, the street trader issue that's going on.
Well, I think first and foremost, it was wonderful to actually realise that Faye Storer does still exist, because of course in the last couple of years she's gone from being the one of the most accessible local representatives we've ever seen, always out and about, always at the market on Saturdays, and over the last couple of years she's become like one of those Soviet era Russian presidents who you don't see them from one year to the next. They get wheeled out to stand on the top of Lenin's tomb wearing a cardboard suit and waving, but the rest of the time it's, well, are they there? Well, the state-run newspaper will tell you what they want you to know. But whether they still exist, we can't tell. So it is good to know that Faye Storer is still among us and is actually real. But it seems to me maybe that what's slowing her down is the requirement to carry around all those immense slabs of local council and RMA boilerplate that she uses to deflect any question. Hmm. And, I mean, as a bit of stonewalling, that was really quite impressive. So I was left with the question that since the local board doesn't seem to take a position on anything, it seems to have no responsibility for anything, there doesn't seem to be a single thing that can't be passed off as, oh, well, that's not our responsibility, that's somebody else's. So I think we've got to ask, why do we even have a local board then?
Yep.
Since they don't seem to want to do anything or take a position on anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's bring you here on Frankie. I mean, you know, one of the issues that Faye was talking about, and we've seen this around the Esplanade, is that a lot of these issues are quite divisive. There are very, very different points of view. How does the board take a position when you have got such diversity of viewpoints?
Well, my opinion is that it doesn't have to be divisive. Just because people have different opinions doesn't mean that it has to divide the community. And I think that one of the roles that the local board can play is as an arbitrator between those differing views. That's my view, that the local board should be sitting there helping the community to communicate amongst itself, you know, between all the differing viewpoints for me. And that's something that I feel very strongly about. I think that's their role, and I think up to this point they haven't been doing it, and I'm very, very feel disappointed and let down by that. Yeah.
Absolutely. This, you know, this never used to be the case with the community board before, that we always got some impression of where their opinions lay and which direction they were headed in as far as sorting out local controversies. But now it's just like, nope, not interested, don't want to go down there.
Well, what I suspect, it's difficult to know whether I'm right or not, but what I suspect is that the board have very strong opinions about things and they don't want to be seen to be expressing those views.
Well, it's very short-sighted.
I think the stonewalling is an attempt to appear neutral, but I don't think it indicates that there's neutrality going on at all.
No, all they appear is ineffectual.
Actually, I think they've been quite effective at stimulating division in the community. Personally, that's my personal view, but. You know,
well, that's what you're here for, your personal view.
Yeah. Yes, so my personal view is that that certainly a significant number of people on the board have encouraged division, because I don't know why. I don't know why, because I don't think it serves any useful purpose, except, you know, I guess everyone's squabbling amongst themselves so they don't notice other stuff, perhaps, you know. Anyway.
But as to not taking a position on the marina development, if they're not going to even be prepared to talk about that, then really what good are they? You know, it was just this constant thing, well, it's not up to us, it's a Resource Management Act thing, and it'll all be sorted out. Well, yeah, that's very reassuring, given the way in which the council seem to just rubber stamp anything that their pals seem to want, regardless of what the population want. So it's not very reassuring.
No.
What do you think about the marina?
I don't care one way or another on that one. It's not something I can get that worked up about, although I'm sure if I was a commuter, I'd have a big problem with it. Because, you know, whilst they say, oh, it won't impact on the parking, the traffic turnaround, local transport and everything, I mean, it will. Come on. I don't see that it's going to provide much in the way of jobs. I mean, it is just a marina. But I really can't get too worked up about it one way or the other.
Well, I'm pretty strongly opposed to it, personally. We're at Matetia. Mm. Yeah. I have no objection to the idea of a marina, but I think that location is ridiculous.
I suppose the only thing I would say is I do have that default position of the concerned Waiheke resident who's just wants to make sure that anything that happens as slowly as possible.
Do you think that that's part of what people are saying, say, in regard to the marina? They're saying there is a knee-jerk reflex on Waiheke, that when someone says, we want to do something, that there is a group of people who automatically say, oh, no, you can't do that, the sky will fall.
Yeah. There is, but then I think there is a lot to be said for that. Because, you know, we are increasingly targeted by people who may not have a long-term stake in the island, who see an opportunity to develop something, make a load of money, and then if it fails later on, well, that's not their problem. They're long gone. And I've just always felt that the needs of people like that should come secondary to the needs of those of us who live here long term and plan to want to be here forever.
Totally.
And yes, if you plan to do anything on this island, you must expect that those of us with a long-term stake in the island are going to look at it very closely and want to try and slow it down. I don't see a problem with that.
No, I think that's quite proper. Yeah, but with the marina in particular, I think there's some very puzzling things about the structure of the group putting it together. I get the impression from what's been said that there actually is no company at all. It's just a bunch of loosely affiliated investors who all have an interest in boats. What I'm talking about is the kind of not necessarily what is actually going on, but what's being said to be going on. You know, the impression being given is that it's this sort of benign group of people who have an interest in boats, and they've got a bit of dosh and they've all sort of put in for it. So it kind of, I wonder things like who takes responsibility when things go wrong with this structure. Where does it lie? You know, what's going to happen if Matiatia turns into a complete mess because whoever's building the marina suddenly goes belly up and there's no more money?
Yes, like the library.
And we end up with half a marina or half the work done and a complete mess left behind and nobody to hang any responsibility on.
I think it is a question of just keeping overview on these things. And, you know, it's all very well for developers and people with these ideas to sort of squeal that, the island's just so hard to do business on. Well, no, expect that. We've had a number of very annoying things simply presented to us as a fait accompli, and there's nothing we can do. And so if the community feel a bit disgruntled about that, well, they've only, you know, the developers and so forth only have themselves to blame because their collusion with the council to make sure that we just don't get a say in this, whilst meanwhile the local boards sit on their hand and grin and offer us excuses, then they can't complain when we get a bit annoyed about it.
So just to come back to a point you made before, Frankie, about the marina. So you said you oppose it at that. By the way, is Frankie's dog sitting on
me? Yeah, this is Pippi, the other opinionated islander.
Yeah. it's not someone groaning in the corner. You said you didn't support the marina being at Matiatia.
Yep.
So where do you think it would be okay to be?
Well, there have been a couple of other locations suggested. One is Kennedy Point. I think there's still some issues there. Again, it is another transport hub already, and I think there may be some impacts, although I don't know a lot about, you know, obviously I'm not highly informed on that, but there was another location suggested as well, which I can't remember off the top of my head. But the impression I've had from talking to people is that there are actually a couple of other viable locations that haven't been properly looked at. For some reason, and this is, I would be interested to know why Matiatia has been chosen as the optimal location, because I think it's probably one of the worst locations on the island for a marina.
So. Well, it's the best deep water mooring on the island, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a lot more going on there than
there's
that.
There's a
though,
reason
there?
Why it's a ferry. The ferry terminals there.
Yes, but I mean, does a marina for pleasure craft really need to be deep water?
Well, they're talking about bringing some big boats in.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What, like the Pacific Princess or something?
Well, not that big, but, you know, I mean, the in the new proposal, the number of berths for boats over 10 metres has been what's the word I'm looking for? There's more.
Increased.
Increased, that's the word.
So stealth, it's another bloody... It sounds. See, this is all stuff that sparks my what's
I don't. To be fair, suspicion. I don't think there's no stealth about that. Graham Guthrie's been very upfront about that.
Yeah.
Well, but increasing the number of berths for big boats at this point seems to me to be a kind of incrementally changing. It seems to be...
Well, no, he's and I should point people in the direction. There is an interview with Graham on the Waiheke Radio website, and he was very upfront that from the past application, that in this application they had changed it and that they wanted more space, more berths for bigger boats.
Yeah.
And he's quite upfront about it.
Yeah, yeah. So what constitutes a bigger boat?
Well, over 10 metres.
Over 10 metres, that's 10 pretty
metres.
Big.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Well,
that's
like
serious.
Shanty is 35, I think, 35 metres. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Is it, or is it foot?
So,
I'm terrible with measurements.
One of the things that, you know, wherever the marina gets situated, it might need a coffee cart.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
well, there again, the I was sitting there waiting for the whole street trading issue to come up, and I loved the aggrieved tone that our leader took about, oh, you know, the attacks that we've had. And I'm glad you pressed her on that. It's like, well, people were being mean on social media. Well, yes, of course we are. I'll put my hand up. I'm one of the people who has been pushing that in local social media. I am very concerned. And the way in which this keeps being referred back to being a rent issue is just completely misleading. This is not about rent. Even if they did decide to start charging rent on street traders, I'm sure the street traders would just sigh wearily and add it to the enormous list of things they already have to pay the council. The fees and licensing application costs and insurance costs on street traders are enormous. And you've really got to hand it to anyone who has the guts to get out there and do it. But what we didn't hear in the interview is the fact that the street trading issue seems to be an issue in Ostend only.
Hmm. Well, no, she was very clear on that. She talked about that, and it's particularly in regard to Saturday and impact on the Saturday market. That was the issue she raised there, that, you know, that the Saturday market would be impacted on by having the coffee cart in Ostend on Saturday.
Oh, have the market organisers expressed?
Yeah, have they said anything about that?
I don't know. We need to find that out, don't we?
Yes.
It's the first I've heard of it, and there's been a lot of discussion about it in various places.
So that was, you know, that was the particular issue in Ostend. So you're right, it is focused on Ostend.
Yes. So the issue, of course, is that Ostend, unlike the Oneroa-Surfdale area, has a squeaky wheel that's demanding way more oil than it's entitled to. And my reason for wanting to keep pushing this issue is that any decisions that are taken or any deliberations that take place over street trading, I want them to be in full view. Because we are seeing an awful lot of stuff just being shoved through quietly, and I don't want this one to get...
So the proposals then, I suppose then you'd support the what's going to happen, which is where they will take licence applications to the full board for discussion.
I don't see why it shouldn't. It's a local issue.
Hang on, though. Is that going to be in front of the public?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't necessarily agree with that. Why should somebody's business be open to public discussion, details of someone's business and what they're doing?
This is the licence application. Yeah, so the licence application at the moment goes to the council. The parks officer, on behalf of the council, consults with the local board. At the moment, that local board consultation is to the park spokespeople, who are Faye Storer and Jim Hannon. They give an opinion on behalf of the board to the parks officer, who then recommends the final decision.
Yep.
So what the change that Faye Storer is proposing is that when the parks officer comes to the board for their opinion, and it's opinion only, it's a consultation, not a decision, that they would take that to the public forum of the local board, that the person making the licence application could speak, others could speak on it, then they would make their recommendation to the parks officer. Hmm.
Well, I'd have to think about that.
Yeah,
personally, I would have to think about that and say it for a bit, and also talk to other people. I just have a feeling there's a little fish hook in that one that's probably not very good.
There probably would be. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly true if you're trying to get a license for liquor sales, that those kind of licenses have to be publicly notified. You've got to put them in the papers 3 weeks running so people can object. But with a liquor license application, your potential competitors are not allowed to object to it. Let's say in the Ostend area, you've got the whatever the rocks is being called now. They should call it the mortuary. It's a miserable place.
I think they're calling it the rocks again.
Are they calling
it open again?
Yeah.
Personally, I can't be bothered. They never have any decent beer. But neither, of course, does the RSA down the road. Now, the RSA, of course, don't have the right to try and restrict anyone else getting a liquor license in the area. So why is it suddenly okay for people in the food and drink business to start complaining and demanding a monopoly?
Mm.
Or at least as much of a monopoly as they can get, using their influence?
Yeah, it's something that I found quite disturbing about this whole thing is the public statements asserting, without actually providing any proof, that the food carts are having a negative impact on Waiheke businesses. There's absolutely no proof
now
that is the case.
And they admit this. This is in the memo from the local board's management, that four businesses have gone under in Ostend recently, and whilst they can't prove that it had anything to do with street traders, it's, well, you know, probably was. Utterly unfair.
Yeah, completely unfair.
Few coffees, few burgers. And the places that have gone bust in Ostend were going to do so anyway. You could have no street traders and they'd have still gone the same way. Assortment of, you know, financial problems, mismanagement, people just not figuring out that on this island you get 6 months of good times and then 6 months of very, very lean, and you just don't plan for that, your business won't succeed.
Well, it may well be. I mean, what we're seeing is that they're actually, you know, it's that huge capital injection to fix premises, which are the things that bring businesses down.
Yeah.
But I think there needs to be more investigation. If people are going to start saying that these failures are caused by particular things, they need to actually have decent research, decent opinions from people.
Exactly,
who know
rather
what they're
than
talking about.
Than sort of saying, well, obviously we can't prove it, but definitely they must have had something to do with it.
I just think that's.
I mean, the restaurant next to the St. John's Ambulance Place. I mean, how many incarnations has that place been through?
Yes.
Since it was, I mean,
it was the health centre.
It was a health centre to begin with, and then a few years ago, it got turned into a food premises, and there's been, what, four different businesses have gone through there? No one's made a success of it.
None of them.
But the trouble is, people still keep thinking, oh, no, I could do it properly. And in they go, they try it, and they stagger through the summer. You get to now, and it's, oh, we can't keep this going, and it goes bust. But this waving accusations around that street traders are somehow responsible for that, not fair at all.
No.
Well, everyone's, I suppose, going to look for someone to blame, aren't they? I mean, you know.
Yeah, but our local board representatives should not be doing that.
No.
That's the difference. I'm entitled to be as ignorant and opinionated as I like on social media and wherever else, but a local board representative is not, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and that memo clearly indicates that there is a feeling that street traders are responsible. So, as I say, it's my concern is to keep this whole issue in the public eye so that whatever deliberations take place, we get to watch and nothing underhand happens.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Because there is skullduggery.
Yeah. Transparency of process.
Yes.
And this seems to be the harping on thing. It's becoming more and more of a continuous issue.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I mean, it does sound actually as if we might have a more transparent process around street trading than we had before.
Good. Yes. And if the pushing that we can do in social media helps that to happen, then great.
Absolutely.
And of course, over the next couple of months, we're going to have all the fascination of watching the contenders line up for the local board elections.
Yes, and they're all starting to kind of juggle for position already.
Yes. It's fascinating. I mean, yeah, I think we can save that one for next month quite safely.
Yes,
we don't need to dig into that one too soon, but it is going to be great fun.
I think the battle lines are being drawn.
I know you're making sort of wind up looks at the moment, but we've just got to tackle the one thing that came up late last night. I must admit I'd had a few, so I couldn't really decipher what was really going on. But the news that United Future have been deregistered as a political party because they don't have enough members.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yep, apparently a political party's got to have 500 fully paid up members, or it just simply can't call itself a political party.
So that's the man with the hair, isn't it?
That's the man with the hair. And I know both Chris and I have very firm opinions on the unacceptability of Peter Dunne. There is no excuse for the man. And now it seems there really is no excuse for him, and he should go.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see the end of him somehow.
No, certainly not. I think
they'll scramble up a few hundred people who give them a donation.
Ghastliness on that level will probably always be with us. But confusion to our enemies, I think, is the thing here. I really do dislike Peter Dunne very, very much. And I suppose, you know, the fact that he went to bed last night worried sent me to bed with a grin on my face.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I think you take a bit more pleasure in other people's pain than I
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely, I love the smell of a burning political career in the morning.
Now, just while you're here, Frankie, since you've kind of got a microphone in front of you, you may as well take this opportunity to maybe just talk a little bit about your survey.
Oh, the All Survey. Yes. There is a survey online currently. I can't tell you the URL off the top of my head, but if you go to www.waihekiesplanade.wordpress.com, there is a link to the survey on the front page.
It's in the papers as well.
Yeah, it's in the papers, and there are hard copies at various different places also. We're really hoping to get a really good response from the community so that we actually do end up with a decent view of what the community would like to see occur.
Don't we think we already know that? I mean, there's already been a survey.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's important now that there's been a couple of years of people using the Esplanade in a different way to resurvey the population. I suspect that the opinions have changed, you know, but I don't think we can know unless we actually do get a decent response from the survey. And I mean, you know, I would encourage people who support the current solution to put their views into the survey, because we genuinely want to know what the community would like to see happen here. You know, not, I mean, we all have our own opinions about what we would like to see happen. But the important thing for us is to get the opinion of the community, a good response from the community.
Sounds dangerously like democracy.
I know. It's awful. It's lefty and radical, but there you go.
And I'm, you know, I'm a published letter writer in support of keeping the Esplanade closed to vehicles. So, you know, just close that. But I did complete the survey, and I think, you know, I think there's been a good job done of keeping it fairly neutral.
Certainly put a lot of effort into doing that.
It's not one of those ones.
I definitely think it needs to be reviewed, because I've talked to a number of people who take the same position I do. I didn't want to see it closed in the first place, but now that it is, I can't see the point of throwing all that money at opening it again.
Because, you know, sometimes you go to these things and you think, you know, okay, question one, do you think that the Esplanade to vehicles is A, terrible, B, very terrible, C, evil incarnate? But it wasn't like that. There was plenty of scope to express views in lots of ways.
There was a lot of robust discussion, I can tell you, about the wording of the survey, and I think in the end we actually did a pretty good job of keeping it neutral, because that certainly was our aim. You know, we're all human beings,
yes,
and we all want to push our own barrows, but we really want to get the opinions of the community.
We've got to get the opinions also of those who just relish the crunch of bicycles and baby strollers under their four-wheel drive wheels.
Absolutely.
You know, some people thrive on that.
And people who hate children. Yeah. That's really
all right, let's finish. Frankie Hill, Alan Knight, cheers, Opinionated mate. Islanders, thank you very much for joining us.
And thanks, Pippi.
Yeah, Pippi, for the
whining. And she's a whining lefty in the background.
Yes, I think her opinions are mainly about dog biscuits and walkies.
Yeah. Yes,
and
I think
the
so.
Importance of both.
And how boring the radio station is.
Yeah. So the Opinionated Islanders will be back on the first Saturday of next month here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio.
Can't wait.
You're with Waiheke Radio. 107.4 and 88.3 FM.
We're going to have a look now at an upcoming workshop coming up at Waiheke Primary School next weekend, which is a Peace Foundation workshop on kind of communication and, I suppose, family relationships and interactions. And here to talk with us about that is Vibeke Brithauer. How are you?
Good. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about this workshop and what's involved with it all.
Okay, well, this is a peaceful family communication course that is facilitated by the Peace Foundation, which is a wonderful organization that do a lot of work in many areas. But one of the things they do is they train kids to do mediation in schools and to give them skills to solve their own conflicts and basically general communication and conflict resolution skills. And the Peace Foundation also offers this course, which is 15 hours of training, and it's aimed at parents, caregivers, I guess anybody who looks after kids, teachers, grandparents. And it's a wonderful, very valuable course, I think, for any parent. And it basically tries to offer you a bit more tools and skills to bring peace and respect in your family and general parenting skills.
So I suppose the audience for this is people who perhaps kind of, you know, have that those beliefs or those principles that they want to have kind of respectful relationships and, you know, dealing with kids' behaviour and all the rest of it,
yep.
but kind of struggle a bit sometimes with how to actually do that.
Yes, well, obviously, I think every parent knows that parenting is challenging. I mean, it's wonderful, but there, I think we all come across our challenges. And there are actually skills that you can learn that will help you with that and that can help you feel less overwhelmed and more in charge and kind of feel like you can really align your actions with your beliefs. And yeah.
So what kind of form does this workshop take? I mean, it's a two-day workshop. Is it 9 to 5, is it, both days?
Yeah, it's two long days, and we're aware that that's two full weekend days, and as a parent you probably have to find some care for your kids. But I just want to stress that it's a free course that in the real world you would probably pay hundreds of dollars for. It's their skills kind of come from the... I guess if people have heard about NLP and...
No, tell us about NLP.
Neuro-linguistic programming. So you kind of learn about how your words affect the people around you and how you can kind of in positive ways affect behavior of the people around you and yourself. Transformational communication. So it's, again, it's one of those skills that I guess in workplaces people get sent on trainings to do that. And this is actually... the wonderful thing about this opportunity is that you'll learn skills that you can use in any area of your life. So be it at work, your friends, because I think, you know, it's inevitable that we run into conflict, and it's more about learning how to cope with that. And, yeah, and that's what you can take away from this course. So I suppose you learn to deal with conflict resourcefully. You learn about to communicate assertively but still lovingly and positive, and yeah.
So how practical is it? I mean, are people going
to
be...
Very practical.
Yeah.
Yeah, very practical, but very relaxed. I don't think you need to be too scared. It'll be lots of fun. I think it's not scary in that sense. It's well facilitated. Peace Foundation has been running this this particular course, I think, for 3 years now, and they do it sometimes in a format of five, I think, evenings, you know, 3 hours. But because they're having to come over to Waiheke, we decided to just try and do this full weekend, you know, get it all under your belt in one go. And all the feedback that Peace Foundation has been getting is that it's, well, pretty much, I guess, people say it's life-changing. They say it's really has an immediate impact in their family lives. Always very positive. So, yeah, a lot of value in it for any caregiver. Yeah.
I suppose there may be, you know, some people who go, oh, yeah, okay, I'm a parent, you know, I've got kids, and I'm kind of wanted some tips with that. You know, I suppose with how this thing runs, you know, the Peace Foundation, people might go, well, you know, a bunch of hippies, I'm going to have to sit around and hold hands and, you know, and kind of open my soul to Gaia or something like that.
No, I don't think that that's what it's about. I mean, of course, obviously the Peace Foundation does have its roots in the peace movement, and that's
so
one of the
things. It's going to be a nuclear free weekend.
Definitely is. But that's just one of the things they do. But this course is funded by the Ministry of Social Development, and there is no, I guess there's not no religious slant or anything else. It really is, you know, a course that, you know, people of all different backgrounds and cultures and, I don't know, stations in life will find value in. Their skills, they're very simple, you know, tested and effective skills that you'll take away and that you get to do. And it doesn't really matter what the rest of your beliefs are in life. Yeah,
now, it's at Waiheke Primary, but is it open to any parents on the island?
Any parents on the island. There are actually people coming from town to do this course. They are organising childcare for their kids, and they're coming as a couple, and they're paying for the ferry and accommodation to do this course on Waiheke, and that's why I thought I'd come on and make sure that Waiheke Islanders get in on it, because this is such a great opportunity.
Okay, and how do people register and kind of get in touch?
Probably right now the easiest thing to do, because it's obviously 1 week from now, is email Viren Gomber, who's coordinating that, at the Peace Foundation. So that's Viren, Virin, @peacefoundation.org.nz. And I've also put a post up at the Waiheke Community Notice Board on Facebook, so you can trawl through there. Or if you really forget all about this, just maybe give Waiheke Primary School a call on Tuesday or leave a message, and we'll make sure that we'll get back in touch with you.
Right.
So, yeah, as soon as you can, get in touch so we know the numbers, and also the places are limited. I think we won't have more than 20 people on the course.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.